and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I'm Liz Loza, and I am joined by my good friend, Dalton Del Don. I missed you last week. Well, not too much. You must have missed me more, actually, because I wasn't here. And today, we're going to provide you with a preview of Week 12 of the NFL season. It's Thanksgiving, babies. But first, before we dive into all of that, we have special DFS news for Thanksgiving week. Yahoo will be hosting a special $1 million Everyone Wins Thanksgiving DFS contest. Everyone who joins this contest is guaranteed to win a cash prize. No losers, only winners. So don't miss your chance at getting a share of the $1 million cash prize. That is a lot of money. Go ahead and visit the Yahoo Daily Fantasy Lobby now and join the $1 million Everyone Wins Thanksgiving contest. Speaking of Thanksgiving, Dalton Del Don, favorite side? Do you have any hot food takes? What are your plans? Hit me with it.
I don't have any hot takes other than I'm in this like crazy survivor pool that is forcing us to use the Thanksgiving slate, and I'm down to 134 people, and it's $6 million payout. So I'm going to be an insane person watching one of these games, and the writing's already on the wall. It's going to be a rough one because I'm pretty sure we're going to be forced to pick the early game, and then the in-laws are scheduled for the afternoon dinner. So I might be in a very poor mood entering that. So I can see the setup is set up for a disaster. But what about you, Liz? Are you, what's your situation like?
Let me just say that I am going to be sending Carly a bottle of wine that she is free to open before 11 a.m. on
Absolutely.
Thanksgiving.
She'll appreciate that because, yeah, I'm going to be a mess. But tell me, what's your setup like?
On the real, I don't cook. I think a lot of people know this, but I'm not a very, like, whenever these trolls enter the comments and they're like, get back in the kitchen, lady. I'm always like, you have not tasted my cooking. No good at it. I bought my husband a smoker over COVID for Father's Day, and God bless him and his talents. He has been doing all of it. But mostly, the thing I am most thankful for, if I may, since I missed last week, I just wanted to wrap up the sports parent discussion now that Pax's Little League fall ball season is over and say that he won the game ball on his last game. My mom was here, so she got to see it, and he had an awesome, awesome game. He got the game ball. He was really, really stoked with himself, and we're looking forward to maybe getting a little private coach situation before we roll into the spring. Well, we don't all have Andy Behrens on retainer like you, friend.
Yeah, sir. Yeah. Congrats, Pax. That's awesome. It's cool that your mom got to see it too. Yeah, man. Yeah. Congrats. Game ball. That's no joke. That's the real deal. So that's exciting, man. That's awesome. Happy to hear it, Liz.
Thank you. It was super cool. All right, now let's get into some things that are not super cool, like Chris Carson undergoing neck surgery and his season being over. It's so bad for Seattle. Like, Russell's not healthy. Matt and I talked about this on the Sunday night pod, like the offensive line situation, Russell's complaints. Obviously, the receivers have some big personalities in Seattle, and that's not exactly gelling well. And Alex Collins has completely underwhelmed. I mean, Chris Carson has been out since week four, and in that time, Alex Collins has recorded more than 15 carries just a single time. And over the past 3 weeks, let's not forget, Russell Wilson's been back two of those times, so we can't just Geno Smith this away. Collins has logged exactly 10 carries, and each of those outings has resulted in fewer than 45 rushing yards. He's not a factor in the passing game, and yet every week, we're fielding questions about Alex Collins, and every week we're putting him in our rankings, and this is just such a cluster.
Yeah, as frustrating as Seattle's passing attack has been, so is the runners. Rashad Penny actually started last week, took the first carry, looked good, like a 17-yard run, and pulled his hamstring, obvious. I mean, I think he did play a few more snaps afterward, but I'm pretty sure he did injure it on that very carry, the first one. And as you said, Collins is not targeted at all. DJ Dallas looks better at times, and there's even Travis Homer. So it's a committee there and an offense that they're taking away the deep ball, and Russell Wilson has not discovered a counter, at least not from the pistol formations while dealing with this finger injury. So it's a total disaster in Seattle. Russell lost three games in a row at home for the first time in his Seattle career. And suddenly the Russell Wilson era is really legitimately in jeopardy.
If the Russell Wilson era in Seattle may be coming to an end, the short-lived, relatively speaking, Jason Garrett era in New York has ended. In fact, Garrett was fired on Tuesday morning Freddie Kitchens is expected to be the interim offensive coordinator. Obviously, Freddie Kitchens is kind of used to getting a bump and handling duties. He did the same thing when Hugh Jackson was fired in Cleveland. He was the running backs coach at the time. I think it's interesting, the connective tissue of the NFL, actually. Freddie Kitchens was obviously a quarterback at Alabama, and Bruce Arians, the team that, frankly, in some ways got Jason Garrett fired, nicknamed, like, knows Freddie Kitchens and nicknamed him Thick from back then. I'm wondering, though, we know the Freddie Kitchens, right? Like, he's an interesting personality. There's an interesting bump attached. Does Saquon Barkley, since Kitchens was a former running backs coach, like, do we think he gets a little bit more run? Do we think there's some efficiency there? What questions are you asking? Do you have any answers?
How is this a disaster offensively Monday night against a Tampa defense that was a bunch of injuries in its secondary, missing Vita Vea? Looked like Barkley may have aggravated something. He was on the sidelines. He's admitted today that his legs weren't totally underneath him. So I don't know how close to 100% he is. But and Kitchens, last I remember him, was just basically underwhelming when Cleveland had high expectations when he was the head coach that year. So I'm not sure if it moves the needle either way, but obviously Garrett wasn't exactly great. So maybe a change can be anything, can do anything but help. But this offense definitely frustrating. Kadarius Toney saw 12 targets and it resulted in not too many yards. So the Giants offense has been a real, real big disappointment. And you'd like to see those who had Barkley stash, like, oh, at least they'll pay off down the stretch. But man, Monday night was just not encouraging. He was on the sideline and banged up. It's a tough matchup against Tampa Bay. But hopefully the move to Kitchens is suddenly helps here. But it can't hurt because obviously Garrett was not the answer.
Well, Kitchens wasn't a great head coach, but he did serve the Browns well when, you know, Hugh Jackson was fired. And I believe the interesting thing to me about Kitchens is that the bang on or the knock against the 2019 Browns was how undisciplined they were. Remember the penalties that they kept recording and piling up. And yet Joe Judge is seemingly one of the biggest sticklers in the league, right? This is not a flexible, loose personality. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. I will say, in terms of upcoming schedule, it is favorable for Barkley. I mean, versus the Eagles in week 12 at Miami. And that's a defense that we've talked about is getting a little bit healthier and finding themselves, feeling themselves. But then at the Chargers, a pretty soft run defense the following week. So there are some opportunities, certainly not in terms of the division, but for fantasy managers to find a little bit of boost. It's not a foregone conclusion that everything's over yet for fantasy.
I like your point about Kitchens being offensive coordinator, because part of that reason that Browns team had hype that year was because of how that offense performed down the stretch when Kitchens was calling the plays. So, it would hardly be the first coach who's not great as a head coach, but is a fine coordinator at his side of the ball. So, the move can't hurt, I'd say.
All right, let's dig into the games now. Just as an FYI for our listeners, all odds that Dalton and I mention are provided by BetMGM. And I just want you guys to keep in mind that they can and probably will change a bit between now and Sunday. So, you know, be flexible, be cool, be like the mashed potatoes. Don't be like the turkey that gets all dry and brittle, you know? And speaking of turkeys, we got to talk about the first game on the Thanksgiving slate. Oh gosh, it's going to be so bad. I think people should take their post-meal nap ahead of it and miss this one. It's the Bears who are traveling to Detroit. Andy Dalton is starting. We got a 50-50 take on whether or not Jared Goff is going to be back from the oblique injury, and we have Tim Boyle. I mean, either way, nothing exciting here. Allen Robinson is still sidelined when we're recording. He's probably not going to play, so, you know, that sounds like another Darnell Mooney with a 90% snap share game and 16 targets, and David Montgomery is likely to roll against the Lions' run defense.
Yeah, this is generally a pretty boring game. And as you said, suggested on the outline here, maybe sleep in. But me, I'm going to be the crazy person because the aforementioned $6 million survivor pool, I've already used the Cowboys and the Bills. Wouldn't be here if not. And you're forced to use this Thanksgiving slate. That's just a way they don't want a bunch of ties at the end. But so I'm going to be a big Bears fan, it looks like. So rooting, who is it going to start, Tim Boyle or Jared Goff while dealing with an oblique strain? But a lot of injuries. Allen Robinson's probably not going to play. Darnell Mooney, for those fantasy managers out there, you got to start him without Robinson. And David Montgomery, man, he was immediately became the feature back, and he's in a really nice matchup with Detroit. But yeah, there's not much to like on Detroit side of the ball other than DeAndre Swift, no matter who starts at quarterback. But yeah, this is not exactly a game you're looking forward to in as a standalone, unless you're a crazy person like myself who's going wild in this survivor pool.
The running backs, man. I think Montgomery probably goes over 100 total yards and finds the end zone. DeAndre Swift, I think he flirts with just under 100 yards. Like, maybe I take the under on 100, but I take the over on 94 for him. But I agree with you. It's going to be a mess of a game. Let's move to the Raiders at Dallas. These are two teams coming off of losses here. It is expected to be a high-scoring game per Vegas, though, you know, as we saw last week with Dallas, Vegas was not correct. An over-under of 50.5 here. Probably no CeeDee Lamb, no Amari Cooper. Looks like if those are two negatives for Dallas, on a positive side of things, Tyron Smith, the left tackle, will be back from that ankle injury. He did practice in full on Tuesday, and that was the first time since week 8. So that will be a little bit of a benefit for Dak Prescott.
While the Raiders are definitely desperate themselves and will certainly be focused, this Cowboys team's in a rebound spot here after last week. CeeDee Lamb is attending meetings, so they're still holding out hope that he can clear concussion protocol in the short week, so he may play. That would obviously affect Gallup. Either way, he would be worth starting this matchup. But without Lamb and Cooper, Gallup could be looking at double-digit targets, and he obviously disappointed last week, as did Cedric Wilson, but that just comes down to the health situation there. But Dak is averaging 3 touchdowns per game at home this year. Historically, throughout his career, he's played better at home. And getting Smith back at left tackle seemingly just been huge for this offense. So expect him to bounce back in a get-right game and score plenty of points on offense, so no matter who starts at wide receiver for them.
Ezekiel Elliott managers have had a couple of heart palpitations because we've seen Zeke leave a game a little bit banged up with a lower body situation. Last week it was the knee. I think we've seen an ankle happen as well. But then he'd return and miss time but come back, and it does look like he is okay. He practiced fully on Tuesday, and I mean, obviously you can run on these Raiders. We saw what Joe Mixon did in week 11. The Raiders gave up almost 170 rushing yards to the Bengals in week 11. So I think we're all predicting that this is a big bounce back spot for Dallas. They are favorited by 7.5.
Yeah, I was worried Zeke was totally done at one point last week, but Apparently it's just going to be a thing. He's just going to deal with this knee issue. It's a thing that's going to be a recurring thing throughout the year, and he's going to look to be in pain at times, and fantasy managers are going to have to realize that because, yeah, it looked serious last week, and now he's already, I think he's off the injury report and good to go this week. So, yeah, even if he's not 100% and at this stage of his career, he can be plenty valuable in fantasy thanks to this situation, especially with an intact offensive line. And you said if the Raiders got ran like all over by Mixon last week, I think they've allowed the 6th most fantasy points to running back. So you're certainly starting Zeke with confidence at home for sure.
I wouldn't mind starting Pollard either, like as a flex, certainly. The Raiders have given up 4 receiving scores to opposing running backs. So if on the short turnaround, Zeke isn't feeling 100, we know that Pollard is still looking explosive, even if he's not being used to the best of his abilities, right? Or to the highest of his potential, then I still think given the matchup, he might have a little bit of run, especially if we're missing 2 of these pass catchers and he's so effective as a pass catcher himself.
Oh, that is a great point about maybe the open targets. But yeah, I have him as my RB30 this week, so he's a flex option. With upside for more, Zeke in a short week aggravates that knee injury right away. Suddenly you have the feature back, a team that's the most favorite of the entire week. So yeah, Pollard upside, a flex option with upside to be, you know, a top 10 back if Zeke left this game injured.
Buffalo is traveling to New Orleans. More injuries here. Alvin Kamara, we know, was banged up. He missed last week. And Mark Ingram, who has, I thought, performed admirably in Kamara's stead, also missed practice. So do we have to keep an eye on Tony Jones, undrafted free agent from 2020 out of Notre Dame? We know he's a good receiver. We know that the Saints could certainly use some of those. He's not particularly explosive or fast, but he did beat out Latavius Murray.
Yeah, even in a bad matchup, man, and it looks like both starting tackles on offensive line might be missing for New Orleans too.
Excellent
but
point.
Just given the running back landscape, if Kamara and Ingram are out, I think Tony Jones, you're treating, you know, a top 25 or whatever type running back, just given the volume. And who knows who's starting at quarterback? It could be more Taysom Hill, who could take some goal line scores. But this is a real, you know, focused team coming in a losing streak, and they're desperate. But there's a ton of injuries. shaky quarterback play. But yeah, this is the backfield situation. It's definitely one to watch there with Ingram. Maybe now looking in line, I would be really surprised if Kamara plays. So yeah, if I had to guess now, it looks like Tony Jones has the New Orleans backfield come Thursday night.
If we're talking about backfields being a guessing game, welcome to Buffalo. What a disaster. I mean, Zach Moss is being quieted completely. It's Matt Breida who is leading the Buffalo Bills backfield. 5 carries for 51 rushing yards. Obviously, game script had something to do with that low tote total for him in the game against Indianapolis last week. But he also out-targeted Zach Moss. You know, I think we have like a three-headed hydra here in Orchard Park, and you also have quite a mobile quarterback who certainly doesn't mind getting it himself, running it in for 6 himself. So this just, I mean, I'm almost tempted to forget about Breida, even if he is the like newly crowned quote leader of the backfield. Forget about Moss because clearly he's fallen out of favor in some respect. And we saw him have some trouble at the top of the season when Breida filled in for him and he was a healthy scratch in the beginning of September. I feel like Devin Singletary has the, this is wild to say, like highest floor because we know he's going to get some action in the passing game.
I would really prefer to not have to use any of those 3 fantasy backs this week. The last 2 weeks, Matt Breida has led Buffalo running backs in fantasy points. And this week, the Saints are the number one run defense in DVOA. So, yeah. And you said Josh Allen, they have a quarterback who's a beast at the goal line stealing touchdowns, too. So it's just not a good setup for that 3-headed committee there. So, I mean, of course, if you there's certain situations, and I understand running backs so thin that you're going to have to use one as a flex, it's fine. But ideally, yeah, you'd like to avoid this committee. I like Cole Beasley, if it's assuming his rib injury is okay. He was practicing. His snaps went back up last week. The numbers didn't suggest it, but the snaps did. And New Orleans has been especially vulnerable to the slot. So I kind of like Beasley here in a bounce back. Within it, because I do not think Buffalo with those 3 running backs in that offensive line, they struggle to run against anyone. And against this New Orleans team, they're not going to be able to run it at all. It's going to be Allen passing early and often.
All right, those were the Thursday games. So now let's skip to the Sunday games and let's start with the Steelers traveling to Cincinnati for a divisional matchup. Eric Ebron, probably out for the rest of the year. He's been dealing with injuries throughout the season, but it looks like that knee is going to be a season ender for him. That obviously means there's more clarity about Pat Freiermuth. We've seen his stock rise. We've seen him, frankly, move ahead of Ebron on the depth chart already, but we like to see the concentration of targets narrowed for him a little bit more. He's averaged 7.2 targets per game since week 6. And he's also, to me, this is the big one because we love, you know, tight ends in the red area. He has recorded 12 red zone looks over that same span of time.
Oh, yeah, he's back to being a top 12-ish type fantasy tight end for me with Ebron out. Like Freiermuth, beast in the red zone. And Ben Roethlisberger struggled with his YPA again last week, but 3 touchdown passes after having not practiced at all for 2 weeks, it was kind of impressive. So he's at least, he's capable, probably an upgrade over Mason Rudolph. So, yeah, I'm with you on Freiermuth. I'm still waiting for Chase Claypool after scoring 11 touchdowns as a rookie as one this year. I'm still waiting for more TDs from him. But yeah, Freiermuth may be part of the reason why they aren't going the sophomore's way. And then on the flip side, T. Higgins, we keep calling him, you know, just remain patient. And I'll stay the same, man. In games played with Chase, their target share is essentially equal. This Chase just happens to be the one scoring all the touchdowns. I do think Higgins has a real nice finish to the season. Although the Bengals went from being real pass heavy in neutral situations to kind of going more run heavy last week, but that might have just been a factor of the opponent, the Raiders being so inviting and letting Joe Mixon run all over him.
30 carries for Joe Mixon in week 11. All right. You got to love, too, that we know that Mixon is the workhorse, right? The unwavering loyalty to Mixon. There's no more Samaje Perine discussion. I don't know if it's the smartest thing in the world to do, given his durability concerns. But for right now, while he's healthy, obviously everyone is happy to take it, including the Bengals. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who we just saw on Monday night, are traveling to Indianapolis. This game has like sneaky shootout appeal, I feel like. Like, this is a game that I would not have at the top of the season looked at and been like, oh, that'll be a good game. But I am quite looking forward to it. Questions for Tampa Bay: are we going to get Antonio Brown back? Obviously, there's some injury and vaccination card situations going on. I'm going to guess that he's not going to be back. And I almost hope he's not going to be back because while he's been out, Leonard Fournette has been beasting as a receiver.
Maybe my read on that situation is wrong, but it sounds like to me Antonio Brown isn't even close to returning. I wouldn't expect him, and I'm totally with you here. This game being a sneaky, a high-scoring DFS-type game to load up in. I wrote about Carson Wentz as a possible DFS building block this week in a column just because last week, I know that Jonathan Taylor was able to run against a good run defense on paper, but the Bills really hadn't faced anyone. Their schedule had been easy, and the Bucs, even without Vita Vea, that's a really tough run defense. So I expect the Colts to be forced to pass more than usual. Hilton's there, Pittman's there. I like Wentz to, again, going to be forced to higher volume than expected with Taylor coming off that monster game. You can expect Tampa Bay to focus on the guy scoring 5 touchdowns. So, yeah, and then on the flip side, of course, Tampa Bay throws it like crazy. So I think a lot of points are going to be scored in this game. Because where the Colts excel is run defense. So whatever, Brady will just throw it. It's just going to feature a ton of passes on both sides. When you look at it like, oh, these two teams have good defenses, but they really excel stopping the run and are beatable against the pass. So I think this could equal a lot of points.
Perfect analysis. We love seeing Gronk back. How about that?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
We putting him back in our top five now. I mean, I think I have him inside my top five. 64% snap share, ran 22 routes, which was about the same as he was running at the top of the season before he hurt his ribs, converted 6 of 8 for 71, and Indianapolis is allowing the 6th most fantasy points to opposing tight ends.
Yep, right there, top five for me too. He's especially with no Antonio Brown. Yep, I'm with you. Gronk is must start every week now.
Carolina at Miami. Carolina is the favorite by a small margin, 1.5 points. I don't really have a lot to say about this game. I feel like that hasn't already been said on the pickups pod with Andy and Scott. Both Andy and Scott spoke brilliantly in a very platitude, but appropriately so, way about Cam Newton and the lift that he gives the Panthers offense. I don't think we can debate that. I mean, I think DJ Moore is back to being a top 20 wide receiver, and Robbie Anderson can even flirt with like top 45-ish space.
Interesting about Carolina is they had the highest neutral pass rate of the year, I believe, last week. Well, that's with Cam Newton becoming their quarterback. I mean, that you wouldn't really expect that. But yeah, no, he threw that dime to CMC for the touchdown. And overall, I'm going to say that it's going to help McCaffrey's fantasy value, even if he loses some goal line touchdowns, just because the offense is moving and so much better. Just apparently, I was skeptical, but Cam Newton is a clear upgrade at quarterback there. So that helps everyone involved. Yeah, including definitely DJ Moore. That was his first touchdown catch since week 4, I believe. So yeah, really nice to see.
Also, maybe it keeps CMC on the field and healthier, because I think we have to have a real talk about what, like, I think CMC needs to have that mirror moment when he's like, I would like to touch the ball 30 times, but clearly the data is bearing out that my body cannot handle that. And in order to stay on the field for my team and for myself, maybe I only touch the ball 19 times a game.
It's literally every single week. He's either in the medical tent or stretching or something. It's a cramp. It's jogging back to the locker room real quickly. It's something. I mean, hopefully, I don't know if that means anything, but you're right, man. I don't know if he can hold up like this. Yeah, it's something to keep an eye on. CMC is, if keep with this workload, he's persistently banged up, it appears to be.
Did you have any excitement over Duke Johnson finding his way onto the field for the Dolphins with Salvon Ahmed out last week and obviously Malcolm Brown still on IR?
I wasn't super excited. I was more interested in Gaskin going in DFS in that matchup against the Jets and was recommending to start him. But so he was more of a nuisance. But yeah, he's just, you know, another body there. And yeah, with Ahmed was kind of, you know, super. I was wondering what that meant when they activated Duke Johnson a few days before the game. And it just meant Ahmed was the guy who was the guy out. But yeah, I mean, Duke Johnson, I've liked in the past, but at this stage of his career, it would take an awfully deep fantasy league.
I think if anything, it keeps Gaskin locked into a workhorse-ish role like we saw him last year, right? Last game, last week, he carried the ball a season-high 23 times. Volume still is king, even if the offense isn't particularly lit, even if we don't. By the way, if we're going to talk about, like, field stretchers helping out the backfield so that they can maybe get a little bit more running room, are we ever going to see Will Fuller? I feel like every week there's a tease, right? Like, Brian Flores said that we'll see Will Fuller before the end of the year. Well, we haven't seen him since week 4, and every week there is some news blurb about his finger.
Yeah, it's a fractured finger too. Yeah, no, I have no idea when he's coming back. And their offensive line is really a problem. It's tough to run the football there, no matter who plays running back. Jalen Waddle's been an extension of their run game, essentially. His A-Dot is as long as it is deeper with Tua in there, but still, I mean, they're just short little passes. And it's really fine for PPR, even if the touchdowns haven't been there. He's impressed as a rookie, and I can't wait to see when they actually open it up, get some other receivers out there, Will Fuller to stretch the defense. But Waddle is really impressed as a rookie for sure.
Tennessee is traveling to New England. I ask you this, Dalton, what could Bill Belichick take away from Tennessee that hasn't already been taken away?
Yeah, I mean, A.J. Brown is like the most obvious opponent's best player candidate this week, if there ever was one. And talk about a guy constantly visiting the medical tent. Man, A.J. Brown. But still, theoretically, this guy should be looking at a ton of targets with no one else there. Even Adrian Peterson was released right before we started recording, if that matters. But yeah, A.J. Brown, if he can stay healthy, should be looking at targets as the Titans are who've been winning most games this year. If they're not getting upset as big favorites, they're actually underdogs entering this game. So should call for a lot of passes from Tannehill. But you're right, man. Belichick shuts down opposing team's best players. So it's a tough one here with looking at A.J. Brown, who's battling a chest injury as well.
And we're seeing the injuries mount. Marcus Johnson was one of these feel-good stories. He's on IR. You saw him grab his hammy last week. And now the latest news is that Golden Tate, remember him? He's been added to the practice squad. So what are we doing? What are we doing here? We got like Golden Tate and Dontrell Hilliard moving the chains ostensibly for the Titans against one of the most strategic, I think you could say, defenses in the league.
It's pretty wild that the Patriots are one of the biggest favorites of the week against the number one seed right now in the AFC if the season ended. But yeah, Belichick, as he has been doing throughout his career, has his team playing better as the season progresses. So yeah, it's turning into a mess of Tennessee with this way, way, way too many injuries, and it's unfortunate. Vrabel's is coaching, keeping them going. But yeah, that's turned into a disaster there. You look at the backfield and the last, who's even there at wide receiver.
I do think this matchup has some like sleeper vibes in it. I don't know if I can convince myself. I haven't written my weekly column yet, but I'm feeling myself want to write about Kendrick Bourne in this matchup. Is it wild? Is it crazy? I know it could be Nelson Agholor 1 week. It could be Kendrick Bourne the other week, but when we think about the defense in Tennessee, there should be opportunities.
Allowed the most fantasy points to opposing wide receivers. I like the Bourne identity, ex-Niner. Ramondre Stevenson, you can't like start him confidently with a healthy Harris. But man, I can't wait to see if he ever becomes a feature back because he looks just truly like special, man. He looks really, really fun.
The Eagles are traveling to these we talk about two beleaguered teams. Like I was about to say, like the Eagles are traveling to New York to take on a beleaguered Giants squad. But like, other than last week, I think beleaguered was probably the best word to describe the Eagles as well. The NFC East is, we all sound like a broken record every single season because this is the division that I feel gets piled on the most. But like my notes, literally, I wrote blarg for this matchup. I mean, we should probably talk about Miles Sanders, right? Because in a twist of irony, the player who was getting zero touches and then finally started to get a little bit of run gets hurt in that game, comes back after missing 3 weeks with an ankle injury and records his highest total of the season, 94 yards on 16 carries. And then he's outrushed, by the way, by his quarterback.
Yeah, but this team has become by far the most run-heavy team in neutral situations over the last month or so. Sanders lost a fumble this game, and I guess he had another fumble punched out of bounds. They ruled him that his forward contact had stopped, so the box score shows this one fumble. And then he sat out until Jordan Howard got hurt. And Sanders had four fumbles over 12 games last year. His final year in Penn State, he led all of college in fumble percentage. So it's something to pay attention to. But I still wrote about him in the DFS column this week. He's $17. If he's going to be the clear feature back with Howard suffering that knee sprain on a team that runs the ball like crazy, favored, yeah, he's definitely back on the fantasy radar. DFS radar, certainly you're using him if you've you've had him this far. Because, yeah, he's being treated as a lead back. Hopefully that fumble problem goes away.
Where are you ranking both? I mean, I think I have Miles Sanders like in my top RB25-ish, but when you see Tom Brady rip off a 10-yard run against the Giants, all I could see was Jalen Hurts moving up my ranks at the same time.
Yeah, that's fair. And Jalen Hurts has just been so rock solid. And yeah, three touchdown runs last week. Yeah, getting it done. Yeah, every week, obvious must start. And yeah, we'll see what happens with Sanders. I think I ranked him a little bit more aggressively than that, but maybe I was psyching myself up by writing about him in the DFS column. But certainly not a safe start. But yeah, I like what the Eagles are certainly playing a lot better. That pocket, I saw some pictures of last week. Hurts sitting there in the cleanest pocket, man. That offensive line got healthy, and it's against a pretty good New Orleans defense, and Hurts had this all day back there. Offensive line really doing work in Philadelphia.
The Falcons are traveling to Jacksonville. This is another delicious matchup. Two very, very obviously lit offenses. Nothing to worry about here. Gross. No, that's not the truth. God, you know, I think about Kyle Pitts in this one because for a minute there, Kyle Pitts was looking like the real deal. And the last time he saw more than 4 receptions was week 7, which is also the last time he was able to share the field with Calvin Ridley. And it feels a little bit like the situation in Detroit with TJ Hawkinson, in that there are just no other wrinkles in this, no offense, no other weaponry. And so defenses know exactly what to do, and they just key in on Pitts and they're removing him. And he's a rookie. So even if he is a generational talent, he's in year one of the generation. And so how are we expecting him to deal with all these double teams? And also, because poor Falcons, Cordarrelle Patterson isn't fully healthy. We know he missed last week, so we have to keep an eye on his availability heading into Sunday.
It's hard not to be discouraged of Pitts' lack of production ever since Ridley went down, but I actually still did rank him as my number one fantasy tight end this
what?
Week.
What? Why? Jacksonville's not even that bad. Again, they're middle of the road against a tight end.
His last month, I know Pitts has not put up the numbers, but against the Saints, defense had bracketed him, and Diggs was on him, and of course, the Patriots, of course, opposing his best player. So I think his matchups have been tough, and he's going to get so many targets with no Ridley and Patterson banged up. And Jacksonville, this is a pass funnel defense. I mean, they defend the run pretty well. They shut down Jonathan Taylor 2 weeks ago. They shut down the Niners last week. The run, they can get passed on much more easily. The main concern I have here is Trevor Lawrence's inability to put up any points on the other side, and maybe just Atlanta wins this ugly 13-7 or something. But and also, this is a tight end week with no Travis Kelce and no real other smash spots either. So, but maybe that is crazy. You're right. Maybe just constantly wish casting and hoping at some point Pitts actually has to put up some numbers. And yeah, if he doesn't this week, then I'll totally admit defeat here. I like his setup here better than I have the last 3 or 4 weeks.
I understand that it's a plus matchup. I just feel like how much is Jacksonville going to need to focus on shutting down the run against Atlanta? Like there's nothing else here. And especially if Cordarrelle Patterson, who at least had some versatility, he made the offense less predictable. And now this offense is so predictable. And Matt Ryan is struggling and Josh Rosen is out there. Like the whole thing seems a bit disastrous. Regardless, you know, we'll see what happens. It's not like, I mean, we're talking about tight end surprises. I didn't see Dan Arnold dropping a goose egg like he did last week either.
Yeah, I was in on, yeah, for sure. No, I thought, yeah, it's so consistent, the production, the targets have been there. By the way, Atlanta last week had 3 different quarterbacks throw an interception. You rarely see that in an NFL game. But yeah, and I was all about Arnold as a top 12 fantasy start last week. And I still think he will. That was just weird. The targets disappeared. I don't know what to make of Lawrence. You look deep enough the last couple games, you squint, maybe there's some improvement, but wow. I mean, this guy was thought of as a generational talent. And I've heard the argument that it truly is the coaching. It really is abysmal, and it really is 100% as simple to point to that. So boy, he'll be really interesting to see how he does with the new staff next year. That's for sure.
Zach Wilson will return under center after a carousel of options that included Joe Flacco most recently and Mike White, obviously. In week 12 at Houston, it is also worth mentioning, not only is Zach Wilson healthy and starting, but Joe Flacco and Mike White are on the COVID list. So we're not going to see them even if something were to happen to Wilson during the game.
Yeah, yeah. Is he fully ready from that PCL injury? I know there was a confidence issue with his knee as recent as last week, but I think this COVID issue with Flacco definitely forced this issue. I'm not sure they would have gone away from Flacco otherwise. Michael Carter's dealing with a high ankle sprain. So a lot of injuries on offense there. Elijah Moore, I know we both love him. I was hesitant to start him last week because he was still splitting snaps with Keelan Cole. Didn't matter. He got the playing time and it resulted. He's just a budding star, man. He'll be drafted. It just depends on who's going to throw, if they can get a competent quarterback there, because, man, he's living up to the preseason hype, which was really high. And yeah, he's the real deal, Elijah Moore, for sure. But I would prefer Joe Flacco throwing him the ball. And Zach Wilson here, suddenly Houston, I mean, Houston Texans, you could be considered like a fifth. I think I ranked them up to fifth or sixth on my defense this week with Zach Wilson. And yeah, this is an ugly game, but it's pretty funny that the Texans are actually 3-point favorites.
The Texans pass defense, by the way, is not bad. I think they have 26 sacks on the season. And if you have a young quarterback, let's not forget that he's a rookie coming back from a PCL issue. As you mentioned, the confidence issue part of him, maybe ghosts just live at MetLife Stadium and that's what he's going to be seeing, because I trust that the Texans will know how to get after him based on what they've put together over the course of the season via their pass defense.
And then on the flip side, I love Tyrod Taylor, top 12 fantasy QB last week, only throwing for 100 yards because he ran in two scores. Yeah. And he's only, I think this is only his second home game of the year. Brandon Cooks has averaged 87.5 yards at home this year. Last week was just a quiet game because of a rare positive game script for Houston. So although I guess they might have another one this week, the Jets are not a good defense. So I like Cooks to bounce back, and Tyrod Taylor is a top 15-ish type fantasy QB this week.
What about all of these running backs? I know you mentioned Michael Carter is obviously out with the ankle injury, which is such a bummer. Part of the reason we liked Carter, even with the negative game script always being an issue in New York, was because of his involvement in the passing game. So when we're looking at replacements, I'm going to take Ty Johnson over Tevin Coleman. Carter, between week 7 and 10, averaged nearly 8 targets per game, and Johnson has averaged 6 over that same amount of time. So I think that can put him in like the RB 30-ish range in PPR friendly formats.
I would like Johnson better if it were still Flacco starting, but I agree with you. I have him, I think, borderline, whatever, 25th, 26th ranked back, Ty Johnson. Tevin Coleman's at risk of leaving a game mid-game injured, yeah, too, at this stage of his career. But yeah, 2 games ago, Ty Johnson saw 8 targets. We both liked him before the season. So yeah, I mean, Michael, it's frustrating to see Carter suffer the injury, but Ty Johnson, next man up, and he can be started in fantasy leagues.
Philip Lindsay was waived. That shouldn't be a big surprise. I think the bigger surprise was that David Johnson was out-carried by, wait for it, Rex Burkhead. You know stuff is grim when that's the case.
Yeah, even when a matchup with the Jets allowing, you know, hemorrhaging fantasy points to opposing backs, I think the most, I'm still not starting Rex Burkhead with confidence this week. That offensive line, I don't know. I mean, I guess game script, if you play with the lead, they're favored. I mean, yeah, I guess, yeah. I mean, boy, I mean, yeah, running back is really that thin. So maybe I need to move Beasthead up my rankings. I probably have underrated him. You're right. He was treated with like as a feature back last week.
David Johnson also looked dusty. And I don't like saying that about players, but when you put up 18 yards on 13 carries, I'm not like an arithmetic genius, but I know that that's some bad math.
Yeah, and Philip Lindsay, you're right. So his ECR, Burkhead was 45. I was just lazy to leave it there. I moved him up to 30. So yeah, he's a starter.
Okay.
You're right. Burkhead getting the carries, and now Lindsay, yeah. And they're favored this game. The Jets have allowed the most fantasy points to opposing backs. So sure, yeah, okay, that totally makes sense, yeah.
All right, it's Burkhead season. Let's go. Okay, running backs who know how to go. Austin Eckler coming off of a 4-touchdown career effort on an island game, like a Sunday night primetime showing. Beautiful thing. Now the Chargers are going to Mile High to take on the Broncos, who are coming off by some Broncos news really quickly in case people missed it. Cortland Sutton and Tim Patrick got paid. Sutton signed a 4-year contract worth up to $60.8 million with nearly $35 million guaranteed. And Tim Patrick, you know, we talk about him being like the most underrated receiver in the league all the time. Well, clearly the Broncos are appreciative of his services and talents because he signed a 3-year, $34.5 million extension with $18.5 million guaranteed. And we all know that the guaranteed number is the important number.
I came across a few people criticizing Cortland Sutton for signing in Denver, ostensibly because of the quarterback situation. But Let me tell you guys, I would be shocked if Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers is not quarterback of the Denver Broncos next year. They are loaded at running back, at wide receiver, at tight end, and on defense. Again, Mike Clay had this unit the number one entering the year before all these injuries. Just looking at PFF's grades per position, their roster on defense. Again, I mean, Jerry Jeudy's going to be a star. I mean, forget it. I mean, the high ankle sprain this year will mask his numbers. I think it's either Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson on a loaded Broncos team that will be one of the favorites to come out of the AFC next year.
And the backfield you mentioned is...
Javonte Williams, everyone loves. Yeah, people fall over this.
And Melvin Gordon is not going away. Like, both Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon have recorded the exact same number of targets, 29 through the air. And Gordon has seen, like, I think 14 more carries on the season than Williams. And maybe Williams is more explosive. I think he has, like, 7 breakaway runs on the season. So we're seeing that tackle-breaking ability that he had in college at the next level. But Melvin Gordon is the more trusted option in the red area of the field, and he has more touchdowns to show for it.
Oh, yeah, it's frustrating for fantasy managers, but Melvin Gordon is fine in real life. Like, he gets
his
done.
He's great. He's 28 years old.
Yeah, yeah. And Noah Fant and Albert O at tight end. Right. I mean, this is a roster that is very deep. Yeah, it's exciting if they get that quarterback position like I'm expecting.
One piece away, and I would not be surprised to see Sierra headlining at Red Rocks sometime in 2022.
Nice, yeah. Your guy Austin Eckler, by the way, just props to him, man. Very impressive and not an easy matchup. Justin Herbert, fantasy's QB1 last week. But man, Austin Eckler, I lowered him in my rankings right before the season started because he suffered that hamstring injury that seemingly was serious, and he isn't bothering him at all, and he's just balling, man. I mean, getting it done.
No. Austin's really good, and I mean, he shared this on the show, so I'm not divulging anything, but I think it's important to reiterate, especially when we talked about CMC and Saquon at the top of the show, Austin is very vocal and honest about what his body can handle. And he would rather be on the field for 17 weeks as opposed to missing time because he overloaded himself. He also talked about the fact that Larry Roundtree is the goal line back, probably the number two in that cadre of options. You've got Justin Jackson, who's always banged up, and the kid out of UCLA. But Roundtree has been the best in practice per Eckler. And also when they're in goal line, like, there's a difference between being in goal line, I know you know this, and being in the red area of the field. In goal line, probably Roundtree is going to get the look because Austin would like to, and therefore the rest of the staff would like to, protect him from any unnecessary damage. And you know, we saw that 2 weeks ago when Roundtree took the goal line stand and fell into the end zone, you know?
Oh, I 100% took a note 2 weeks ago when he took that goal line carry, and I added him in a deeper league. Roundtree does appear to be the guy there. You know, that is of note. That's interesting to hear Eckler talk about in preservation of his body, part of the reason, because, yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the Rams and the Packers. I'm surprised that the over-under on this is under 50. It's at 47.5, which seems a bit low. Packers are 1-point favorites. The Rams have obviously dropped 2 in a row, but they're coming off of a bye. For me, the biggest question mark for the Rams in this game is not whether or not they win or lose, but from a fantasy perspective, how integrated are we going to see OBJ into this offense? Robert Woods, done for the season. We knew that. We were willing to allow OBJ, it was a pretty big mistake 2 weeks ago. It didn't go great, but I think we're allowed to say, okay, well, he was forced into action and rapport and chemistry, blah, 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 blah. But now coming off a bye, I feel like the excuses are more limited.
This game opened at 50 points, so it's dropping. You're right. That total, I did not realize it was down to 47.5 because I expect a high scoring game as well. I would personally rather go with Van Jefferson than Odell Beckham at this point. I need a prove it game, at least from Beckham. New team and all. Cup, I said, go ahead and pay up for in DFS, $36 his salary. He's just leads in every single statistical category among receivers. And just now with no Robert Woods, I don't think he scored the last 2 weeks too. So he's due for some hitting some pay dirt. So Cup has just been so, so unstoppable. I don't know. Are you more encouraged about Beckham? I just remain a little skeptical. Certainly wouldn't want to start him without a prove it game first.
Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota receivers lit up Green Bay last week. I don't think that OBJ is going to pull down 8 receptions the way that Adam Thielen did last week. But do I think that he could flirt with, I don't know, 4 catches, 5 catches for 70 yards? Like, one big catch from OBJ can get you to 70? That's flex territory.
Yeah, it absolutely could happen. You're right. They were absolutely lit up Green Bay secondary last week by Minnesota. For sure. Conversely on Green Bay, my guy MVS, just when I finally given up on him, was a double-digit targets. Where did that come from? Are you kidding me? And I officially had dropped him everywhere and stopped recommending him. But yeah, pretty annoying to see that. But actually nice for MVS. I'll always root for him. But and it's not like it took away from Davante Adams either. He had two scores. So yeah, I'd be surprised if this isn't a back and forth with a lot of points scored in this one.
And we're still staying strong with AJ Dillon, right? We're not, even though he didn't clear 100 yards total, it was 97. We're not too unhappy with that, right?
Yeah, I'd recommend him in the DFS this week. It's still a reasonable $21 in our game. No Aaron Jones. He was still treated as the feature back. I know the carries weren't there, but he secured all six targets. He'll be the goal line guy there. So, yes, I'm still in on AJ Dillon, even if he disappointed in his start last week.
The aforementioned Vikings will be going to Levi Stadium to take on your 49ers. You going to this game, Dalton? You going
to
be there?
No, I only go to the night ones. I got to write for you guys.
For work. Have to work. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. This is a huge game. This is playoff implications. This is the final wildcard spot for the NFC. And the tiebreaker is the head-to-head. So this is huge. I'm not sure if I'll be happy that I have to miss this one because the Niners are so bad at home. They're 2-11 their last 13 games in Levi's Stadium. But this should be a fun game that's also high scoring, and you could load up on DFS here. Kirk Cousins forced to pass because the Niners are tougher to run against than to pass. So anytime you force that team to pass, like last week, you actually see some offensive fireworks when Mike Zimmer allows it. So, and then on the flip side, the Niners, Elijah Mitchell, broken finger, maybe forced Jimmy G to throw, who has the only NFL high four straight games with 100 passer rating.
How are you feeling about Jimmy G? I want to ask you this. Hold on. I want to say, how are you feeling about Jimmy G? I know that you were high on Trey Lance. I believe that I was the only one on our staff who said that I didn't expect Trey Lance to start in the first month of the season. I thought it'd be week 7. I didn't expect him to not be starting at all. But how is that processing? How are you digesting all of that? Especially because Jimmy G's not been bad. I mean, you could say it was Shanahan's system, but like, he's been on a tear.
Yeah, I didn't expect this. I didn't expect Debo to emerge like he has either. It's been a definitely unexpected season for the Niners, but I'm happy that they're back as playoff threats and looking good the last 2 weeks. Totally left for dead, and then Monday night they destroy the Rams and then obviously beat up on Jacksonville. But I have Trey Lance in 95% of my fantasy leagues on the bench, and it looks like it's definitely going to take an injury, 100%. So that makes sense in hindsight, given the roster and Lance being so raw and Jimmy Garoppolo's situation. But if nothing else, I did expect him to get injured, and it was really only one game. And he's looked great the last 4 weeks with the calf healthy. He's been accurate. I mean, he's not, some great top 10 real life NFL quarterback, but he can execute that Shanahan system, and it works. It's nice. It's been really rare to have Debo, George Kittle, both healthy, and now Ayuk out of the doghouse. All three of those guys going at the same time is really rare. It'd be amazing if they could get those three and a feature back all at the same time.
How are you prioritizing them? Debo, obviously, first, and then Kittle, and then Ayuk, I'm assuming?
Yeah, Kittle's finally getting used in the red zone. It was not since week 4 of last season had he been targeted inside the 10, and then it's like 3 straight weeks he has. So it's been a total reversal in his red zone usage. You love that. And then Ayuk is still a top 30 fantasy wide receiver because, again, this team may not be able to run with great success without Mitchell. And it's a really concentrated target tree, really, really narrow. It's just those three guys and no one else. So even with Debo, and Debo last week was a top 20 PPR fantasy receiver, and he had one catch for 15 yards. How wild is that? Because he runs the vibe. So he gets his yards from scrimmage. So I still think Ayuk is startable, even with a healthy Kittle and Debo.
Kyle Shanahan said that Elijah Mitchell was day-to-day with a finger injury, but it sounds like you're anticipating he'll be sidelined.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm skeptical. It sounds like that surgery did not go as anticipated if you read closer to John Lynch quotes, but it'll be a total guess. But if there's no Mitchell, Jeff Wilson disappointed last week, but he got like 19 carries and he would be a total flex option or even an RB2 as a feature back there. And I can't believe Trey Sermon is apparently warranted as a bench stash now. But that would be a guessing game if I had to. But if Elijah Mitchell is out there, Shanahan likes him far more than his alternatives.
Agreed. I think Jeff Wilson moves up to like RB23 territory if there is no Mitchell. So we will encourage all of you guys to keep tabs on that because I said at the top of the show, stuff is going to unfold between the time you listen to this and the time the games are played. Sunday Night Football is the last game we have to preview. The Browns at Baltimore. I mean, this you got two quarterbacks with question marks. Baker's health has certainly been an issue. If you go on Brown's Twitter, there's a clamoring for Case Keenum to just finish out the season. And Lamar, non-COVID-related virus last week kept him out. So we expect he'll be back on Sunday.
Yeah, I just sit through Baker Mayfield. That's the team I had last week in that big survivor pool with Cleveland, and it was ugly. I know he's gutting out an injury, but a healthy Keenum would clearly be an upgrade. I mean, against the Lions, he was throwing some ugly picks when they had the lead and just didn't need to turn the ball over. And I've been very defensive this week, too, but it sounds like he's going to try to play through the injury. But yeah, it's not great. And Nick Chubb got a lot of those carries late in that game. He was underutilized, but nice to see him, you know, recovered from COVID and looking once again like one of the best backs in football.
Devonta Freeman, too. I mean, he's recorded double-digit carries for three straight weeks. Le'Veon Bell, obviously, off the squad. Latavius Murray is back from the ankle injury. But it was Freeman last week who continued to lead the backfield. And, you know, the matchup is not the easiest by any means. But on a team that likes to run the ball a whole heck of a lot, even if they're passing it a little bit more, you have to imagine that Freeman would be the one to choose.
Yeah, I'm with you. Freeman's a top 30 fantasy back. You're not overly excited to start him, but you can. I was excited to start Rashad Bateman last week until the Sunday morning news, surprise inactive of Lamar Jackson. And that just totally shelled up both offenses. It hurt. I liked Kmet on the other side of that game, but it just
Don't talk to me about Kmet.
It really was a domino effect, I swear. But I'm blaming Lamar Jackson, man. By the way, I hope he gets better. It's odd that he keeps suffering these illnesses. And then he showed up to the stadium, too. I found odd, too. But I do expect Lamar to return this week. But last week, that was a domino effect that affected both offenses, just totally shelled up. And Bateman, was even without Marquise Brown, was not productive. So got to pay attention to Hollywood Brown's status dealing with that thigh injury. Unfortunately, it's a Sunday night game, so hopefully we get some clarity, you know, beforehand.
All right, clarity is what we need. Shelling up is what Dalton is talking about. It's time for us to shell up this episode because we've run out of games to preview. But if you want to keep chatting with us, we love chatting all the time. You can do it with us on Twitter. You can follow me at LizLoza_FF. You can follow Dalton at Dalton, whatever you want to call him. You can follow him either way at Dalton Del Don. And while you're there, make sure you're following at Yahoo Fantasy. Stick around here too, because Matt Harmon will be joined by TJ Hernandez for a DFS preview of this week's games on Friday's episode of the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. Go ahead and win yourself some money. You're going to need it for the holiday season. And until then, have a happy Thanksgiving. May the gravy pour with bounty along with your fantasy lineup. We're out.